What's going on, guys? Welcome back to a brand new season of Overserved with myself, your host, Pooch, and my co-host, Rachel. What a better way to get right into things. The Australian Open just ended this past weekend. Bunch of great tennis being played.
An insane tournament. And we got to start off with talking about one of your favorite players, Jannik Sinner, who just played remarkable this tournament. What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's about time, right? It's about time. He's looked great. He's looked fantastic the last year. Kept getting to a point. Was making really deep runs. You would think, you know, he's finally going to get past that hurdle. And then finally did it now. And I mean, what a better way to do it against Djokovic. And the comeback against Medvedev, just wild.
And I feel like he's always been a bit overshadowed by Alcaraz. But it was so good to see him just stay so steady this entire tournament. And the way that he beat Medvedev was one of his most impressive matches that he's ever played. You know, I got to talk about Medvedev a little bit. In his press conference, he did say, I feel like part of that match was lost in the previous rounds. He felt like he was never fully recovered for that match, starting from the first match he played against Altman. He was like, I feel like I have not had time to recover. I have these late night finishes multiple times. I think like at 3 a.m., I think like even at 5 a.m. or something. He never was able to truly recover for this match. He said that his strategy was these big shots, quick points. And that's what he did the first couple of sets. But then Sinner, he kind of caught on to that. And then he himself started stepping up, making those big shots and just slamming these shots down the line and really just taking Medvedev off his game, wearing Medvedev out. I think that Sinner is one of the most, I've said it before, I interviewed him a bunch of times just a couple years ago, and he's like the smartest player I've ever heard talk. He's so self-aware of his game and just so intelligent. And I just loved watching him, and it was so fun to see him win that tournament. Just such a humble guy and so likable. It was really good to see.
Yeah, it felt like things changed, at least for me, when I was like, okay, there's actually a chance. A, obviously, when he beat Djokovic, but a certain point in that match, when Djokovic won that tiebreak, and then it was going to that fourth set where Sinner would end up winning. But I feel like most guys, maybe even him in the past, like that confidence level, okay, you're up, you know, 2-0 against Djokovic. And then it's a tiebreak that he looked like he had a hold of, lost it. So now it's 2-1. He's still in the lead, but I mean, it's Novak. It's Novak. You know what I mean? Some of those things at that stage, it's, you know, he could have lost confidence, lost that next set, could have went 5. And then you're really like, oh, but he seems steady. Didn't face one break point that entire match, which is wild. Yes, Novak didn't look on his game, but still, I mean, it's just credit to him. He looked like he's about to have a real special year. And then my question is next. So right now, Alcaraz, as we know, has 2 slams still, right? Sinner, who had 0 and seemed like Alcaraz was just going to keep climbing. Now that rivalry, I would think, you know, rises even more because now it's 2-1. I mean, Sinner looks like he's at that point. I don't want to say unstoppable, but like he's going to have a very, very big year. So my question is are we going to see that year, that Alcaraz last year, where at some points he looked unbeatable and like he was going to be the Novak of our generation, which still could be. But right now, is it something where now Sinner jumps back on top and Alcaraz takes a little bit of a back seat?
It's Louis Vuitton versus Gucci, baby. We got to pick one. So for me, I keep going back and forth. It's very hard for me to choose which player is going to be the more successful player, is going to have the most slams at the end when it's all said and done with their careers. Right now, I mentioned, I think Jannik Sinner is a more mature player. I know he's got only 2 years on Alcaraz, but I think he's more self-aware in his game than Alcaraz. But I do also think that Alcaraz has that advantage for kind of being a multi-surface player. Just with his Wimbledon win, I think he can be really good on clay. I think he's got that kind of working for him. Now it's really kind of 50-50 after this tournament. It's going to really depend on Alcaraz growing into his game and maturing, I think. So
the one thing that people are saying is Alcaraz didn't play a lot of tennis going into the AO. Like he didn't play any upcoming leading tournament, so that could be something, but he just did not look, he looked very beatable, and it was something where Sinner did not look beatable at all. I know he went down 2 sets and at a point looked like he wasn't playing great, but I mean, especially going that deep in the run, going against Medvedev after Novak, I think Sinner is going to have that real big year, and I'm not saying Alcaraz is going to have a down year compared, but for his standard, I think possibly.
Yeah. And I do think that Alcaraz, part of the maturity thing is I feel like he is so reliant on his coach, Ferrer. Like I feel like he almost is like using him as a crutch in his matches. And I think that's something that he's going to have to overcome and just kind of be out there on his own. Jannik, like I said, is just so sure of his game, knows what to do and can problem solve so well during a point, during a match, and knows how to adjust his game to continue to beat his opponent. I think it'll be really interesting to see.
So are we saying, at least, are you saying or predicting that Sinner will have more slams at the end of this year than Alcaraz?
Yeah, I would go with that. Yeah.
Okay.
No, what about you?
I mean, Sinner's my guy, so I'm going to go Sinner either way. I mean, I have to. So I'm going to say same thing. I agree. Sinner is going to have more slams, which is possibly might be a little bit of a wild take.
Yeah.
But, because it's only, I mean, he still has a one slam lead on him, you know, and there's only four in the year, but I think Sinner's gonna have that big of a year.
I guess Alcaraz does have the experience of winning at the last two slams of the year, Wimbledon and US Open, so it will be interesting to see.
For sure. And then moving over, obviously have to speak about Sabalenka, what she did in back-to-back AO Opens, Australian Open winner. That obviously is an incredible in this sport to go back-to-back. It's something where, I mean, her confidence has to be very high, obviously playing there. Did not drop one set in this tournament, which, I mean, obviously we've been seeing everywhere. It's just, it doesn't happen. My question is, and this might be a little bit of a hot take, is it as impressive as everybody's saying? Because you're looking at that draw, and obviously I'm not saying not dropping a set, extremely impressive, but for who she played and Sabalenka, I think being that much above at least who she played, was it that impressive what she did?
Well, like you said, the Australian Open, winning back-to-back Australian Opens is hard to do. It hasn't been done since 2012, 2013. And I think kind of a lot goes into that being the first big tournament of the year and right after off season. But I do think that, you know, just a year or two ago, a lot of people there were talks of Sabalenka being a choker. She just, you know, had trouble closing out big matches. She had a lot of issues with her serve where she was serving like two dozen double faults in a match and then had the yips on her toss and couldn't toss the ball in the air. And so people were calling her that. And now she's one of the most solid players in the game. And I think that there's really no talk of that anymore. I think that, you know, any match in a Grand Slam is not easy. There's not one easy match. These are the best players in the world. You have to get past seven big matches to win the title. And all of her opponents were respectable. I think, you know, she had to get past Krejcikova, who, caused her some issues at the French Open last year. And then Coco Gauff, of course, who's just incredible. She beat Coco in the semis. And then Qinwen Zhang has just been having a really, really good year. She finished a year strong last year. So none of them were easy. I think that, I think she totally deserved that. I think she earned it. She really had to dig deep in a couple matches, even though she didn't lose a set. So yeah, I wouldn't say that it was like an easy or like an asterisk or something against that.
I have to say the only reason I was a little bit surprised was because in her lead up tournament, she played Rybakina and got smoked, absolutely smoked in two sets. Just did not look great at all. I don't know what was going on. And for her to do that and go into the Australian Open, not lose a set, I think extremely impressive. But if you could have told her at the beginning of the tournament, hey, you're going to be playing Zhang in the championship for your second back-to-back AO Open, I think she would have said, yeah, please. Like, okay, that 100% works. And it's no discredit to her. It's just compared to – I think she absolutely, her not seeing Rybakina, I would have loved to see that matchup back to back, the mental mindset of her just getting, you know, dominated by her in the upcoming lead tournament. So I guess I kind of wanted to see that, you know, see beat the best type deal or Iga. But at the same time, those players played the best in this tournament to make that deep run. There's nothing she could do about it. She faced and did what she had to do in front of her. Me personally would have liked to seen it a different way or against maybe a different opponent, but she did what she had to do, did not lose a set. Like we said, extremely impressive.
Yeah, completely agree with you there.
Absolutely. And then getting into
a new segment.
Yeah, new segment here at Overserved. Some winners and losers of the week, just with the tennis world on and off the court. Starting off, my big winner of the week, made himself some money. Not that he needs it, but Nick Kyrgios. I think watching him, at least for me, hearing him in the booth, commentating his side perspective of it. I loved it personally. You know, I really do think he could not go back on court and doing this and would be fine. He might make just as much money, if not more. I heard ESPN's been paying well, at least the numbers they're throwing out to everybody, the McAfee show, Stephen A. Smith, they pay well. So I think obviously there's not as many huge tournaments, but when he does commentate, I think, and if he's not on court, I think they're going to keep asking him back. So I do think he made himself some money, and it in a way, it's great for Kyrgios. It sucks for us because I want to see him back on court. And it looks like, and it sounds like him doing it hopefully made him want to get back on court, being in the setting, speaking about the players. He looked like he was really into it. So hopefully that means he is edging to get back. But at the same time, he could be like, hey, you know what? Sitting in this damn chair and making all this money is pretty nice. He's just getting just as much attention, if not more. So my big winner of the week wasn't even on court, Nick Kyrgios.
No.
My second winner of the week, obviously, is Italian Americans. We love anything. Yannick Sinner, big win. The Italians love it. I mean, everybody knows when Tommy DeVito for the New York Giants came and was doing the whole AO and the mom's chicken cutlets. Obviously, Sinner's an authentic Italian, but we're still claiming him. I mean, I've never been to Italy, can't speak a lick of Italian. But, you know, Sinner's my guy. So I had a lot of off-court winners this week. Nobody, I'm not like, oh, anybody on court won. It's all the off-court. But tennis, my loser of the week, big loser. It's not a surprise, I don't think. But just kind of the, I don't want to say tennis media, but the tennis media outlet or coverage in the United States. Obviously, the tournament was played in Australia, so you're not going to get a ton of media. It was on ESPN, which is great, but just the time it was on, and I think it would have helped if some American players made deeper runs, because obviously there's more coverage based on that they're talking about in ESPN. Would have got a little bit more, which I think would have been really good, because I think the Australian Open is one of those tournaments that is just the environment. It's great for tennis, and I wish we got more coverage here. So a clip I did see was McAfee was talking about Yannick Sinner on the McAfee show, which is one of the biggest shows in sports. I'm going to have our producer throw that clip in. It was pretty funny.
I don't know about tennis, okay? Yeah. I play both-handed. I don't know anything about it. Play ping pong. Love pickleball.
What?
I understand batting balls over nets. I enjoy it. Never got into tennis. But watching this Sinner dude, he's fun.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He really worked last night. It was beautiful.
So that was cool. But besides that, didn't see much going on. Any highlights, anything? It was unfortunate.
Yeah, I absolutely think that the 12 hours us being behind of Australia, us Americans, we are all still recovering from 2 weeks of no sleep. So we might be the loser of the week too in that case. But I have some winners and losers of the week. And I've got two winners. And my first winners are, I'm going to give it to, let's call it the seasoned older veteran pros of the tour that are just thriving in doubles right now. Starting with Rohan Bopanna, he won doubles, Australian Open doubles. He is 43 years old, which is just outrageous for tennis, but he did it. And he reached a career high number one world ranking at 43 years old. I mean, just inspiring. And along with him is Su Wei Shay. She won women's doubles and mixed doubles, Australian Open. She's 38 years old. Not as outrageous as 43, but it's up there. I think that it's something to be said for these older players really thriving in doubles on the tennis court. So they're definitely the winners of the week for me. I've got one other winner of the week, and that is we're going to take it to France, where one of the biggest junior tournaments of the year is Les Petits. And it is kind of, this tournament is like where the juniors get that real first kind of taste of what a professional career is going to be like. They have media, they're trained for media, they've got press conferences. So there's this American player, his name's Teodor Davidov, and he is ambidextrous. He hits forehands on both sides. It's rare if you see this kid hit a backhand. And he won doubles of that tournament, which is great. But I've never seen an ambidextrous tennis player, and he is fascinating to watch. So he's going to be my other winner of the week.
Yeah, no, he sounds like Ohtani, the baseball player who pitches and hits. So, I mean, that's just anything that's unusual like that, great for the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So really, really fun to watch. And then I have a loser of the week. And I'm sorry to say it. I've met him before. Super nice guy. But I gotta say, Wim Fassett, he was Chinwen Zhang's coach, right? She put in a lot of time with him, worked really hard. And when Naomi Osaka came back to tour, he said, bye, Chinwen, I'm going to coach Naomi. And Chinwen, she was very upset about this. She went to press. She said, this is not okay. My feelings are hurt. I put in a lot of time with him. I just feel betrayed. I can't believe he went to Naomi Osaka. And if we look at the Australian Open, Naomi loses first round. I mean, Naomi, granted, one of the most paid female athletes of all time, one of the most talented players of all time, but she loses first round. Chinwen Zhang goes to the finals of the Australian Open. I got to say, Wim Fassett, I love you, but you're the loser of the week.
No, he definitely, in the sense, you know, what goes around comes around, he probably deserved. But I can't blame him. I can't blame him. I know, me personally, it's like one of those things, if you end up talking to that one girl, you know, and she's she really likes you. So you know what? You're like, hey, this is great for now. But then there's that one girl you've been dying for, who showed you no attention, but that just one day finally showing you a little bit of attention. And that one girl has been through you with everything, who's like, you know, she's great, she's fine, she's okay. But then that one girl over there that just never looks at you, finally looking at you, it's tough. I can't blame him. I can't blame him. A little bit of a different circumstance, but I get what he did there. I get what he did there.
I hear what you're saying, but I am sticking to it. Wim Fassett is still the loser of the week, for sure.
But another, obviously, we talked a little bit about some tennis media. This is now not based on the Australian Open, but in the United States, tennis is getting a little bit of media coverage in a different way, for a little bit of reality TV. Of course, I would know that. I don't watch The Bachelor a ton, but I have seen it, just being in that space and seeing that the new, I guess it's The Bachelor, right? He is The Bachelor. The Bachelor is a big tennis guy. So I know you probably have a little bit more on it.
Yeah. So I never really watched The Bachelor, but of course I had to this season when they announced that this certified professional tennis pro is the new Bachelor. His name's Joey Grazadeh, and he is a 7-year USPTA certified tennis professional. Shout out USPTA. I'm going on 9 years with USPTA. So he is a good tennis coach, and he coached in Hawaii, and he's the new Bachelor. And I watched the first couple episodes. He is just so likable. He is so sweet. I feel like he's just really good to watch. He's great to all the girls on the show. And I definitely like him. His tennis strokes are a little bit questionable, but he seems like an amazing guy. He's treating all these girls like princesses. So definitely a Joey Grazadeh fan.
Nice. I might have to tune in. Yeah. I don't know how he was actually doing some tennis hitting in the show. Was it just like the pre-show, the entry?
So it's actually been so cute to see like how they've kind of themed this season around the sport of tennis. He took one of the, who's the guy that I guess announces like the roses or something, Jesse, I think. He took him on, and they were playing, I believe next episode is like a Bachelor Open where all the girls will be playing tennis against each other or something. So it's really cute to see them kind of theming this season around the sport of tennis.
Nice. So we can't get any damn highlights of the Australian Open on ESPN during the day, the matches before, but I'm sure that we're going to see a bunch of Bachelor tennis. Right. I don't hate. I'm not mad at
priorities.
Exactly. Not mad at it, as long as it's getting a little bit of coverage. Hey, I might have to tune in.
Right. We're all for the coverage, tennis coverage.
And that's it for this week of Overserved. We'll be back next week with some more winners and losers and some more Overserved coverage.
Thanks for watching, guys. See you next week.